Good morning, and welcome to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios. Rick Hansen, PhD, is a psychologist and New York Times best-selling author. He's been invited to speak at NASA, Oxford, Stanford, Harvard, and meditation centers worldwide. His books are available in 28 languages and include Making Great Relationships, Hardwiring Happiness, Just One Thing, and Mother Nurture. His work has been featured on the BBC, CBS, NPR, and other major media. And now, Just One Thing. When is it time to fold 'em? The practice? Let it go. Why? Most people, me included, are holding on to at least one thing way past its expiration date. It could be a belief, perhaps that your hair is falling out and you are ugly and unlovable as a result, that you can't say what you really feel in an intimate relationship, or that you must lose 10 pounds to be attractive. It could be a desire, such as wishing someone would treat you better, pushing to make a project be successful, yearning for a certain kind of partner, or wanting to cure an illness. It could be a feeling, like a fear, grudge, resentment, long-time grief, or a sense of low worth. It could be a behavior, such as jogging with aging knees, playing video games, or buying clothes. It could be something you insist others do, such as make their beds, drive a certain way when you're in the car, or meet particular goals at work. Some of the things that we're attached to are obviously problematic, and usually we know it or could know it with a little reflection, such as self-critical thoughts, obsessions or compulsions, defensiveness about your issues, or drinking too much. These things are relatively straightforward to deal with, even though they could be difficult. The hard things are the ones that make sense, that have good things about them, that would be good for you and likely others if they could work out, like longing for love from someone or wishing more people would come to your store, or hoping that you're free of cancer, but alas, are either not worth the price, or it's sadly clear that you just can't make them happen. You've watered the tree, fertilized it, protected it, even danced around it at midnight under a full moon, and it's still not bearing any fruit. Now what do you do? How? Sometimes you just have to let it go. For starters, take a clear look at yourself. For example, I'm a churner, a plugger. It's tough for me to accept that my efforts are not producing the results that I want. But to keep trying to grow corn in the Sahara, pick your own metaphor, when there's little or no payoff, either present or insight means that you are stressing yourself and probably others for little gain, plus wasting time, attention, and other resources that could be better invested elsewhere. Step back from your situation, whatever it is that you're attached to, and try to hold it in a larger perspective. get some distance from it, as if you're sitting comfortably on a sunny mountain looking down on a valley that contains this thing that you've been holding on to. Exhale and relax and listen to your heart. What's it telling you about this attachment? Are the conditions truly present to have it come true? Is it worth its costs? Is it simply out of your hands so that your own striving, however well-intended, skillful, and honorable, just can't make it so? You get to decide whether it's best to keep trying or time to let it go. Be with these reflections, perhaps sitting quietly with a cup of tea or in some place that is beautiful or sacred to you, and let their answers sink in. You can help yourself let something go by making it concrete. For example, put a small stone or other object in your hands and imagine that it is the thing that you've been attached to. Hold on to it hard. Let your desires and thoughts about it flow through awareness. Feel the costs related to it. And when you're ready, open your hand and drop it. And open as well to any sense of relief, freedom, ease, or insight. You could do a similar practice by writing a note about this attachment and then tearing it up and letting its pieces fall away. Or you could talk with a trusted being, perhaps a friend or therapist, or in your own kind of prayer, and explore the attachment, communicate your intentions to move on, and let it go. You might still have the wish that something works out, but you no longer feel driven, compelled, intense, fixed, caught up, identified, or strongly desirous about it. You have accepted the way that it is. You have surrendered. In a healthy sense, you have given up. Make space for the disappointment or grieving that's natural when you let go of something that's been important for you. It's normal to feel sad about a loss. Then, after a while, it occupies your mind less and less, and you move on to more fruitful things. Let good things come into the space that's been opened up by whatever you have let go of. These could be more time, freedom, energy, peace, creativity, or love. Of course, there are many things worth pursuing, including the next breath, but you can make wholesome efforts while simultaneously letting go of attachment to their results. Let yourself be surprised, both by what might replace what you've released and by the power of letting go in general. As the great Thai Buddhist teacher Ajahn Chah once said, "If you let go a little, you will have little happiness. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of happiness. If you let go completely, you will be completely happy." You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. And here's another Just One Thing. Are you stressed or upset? The practice: leave the red zone. There I was recently, my mind darting in different directions about projects in process, frazzled about little tasks backing up, uneasy about a tax record from 2010 we couldn't find, feeling irritated about being irritable, hurrying to get to work, body keyed up, internal sense of pressure. Not freaked out, not running from an attacker, not suffering a grievous loss. My own troubles tiny in comparison to those of so many others, but still, the needle on my personal stressometer was pegged in the red zone. Then, that quiet background knowing in all of us nudged me to cool down, dial back, defrazzle, take a breath, exhale slowly, repeat, start getting a sense of center, exhale again, slow the thoughts down, pick one thought of all rightness or goodness and stay with it. Exhaling worry about the future, coming into this moment, just sensations, calming, mind getting clearer, focusing on what I'll do this day and knowing that's all I can do, the body sense of settling down yet again, sinking in to make it one bit easier to settle down the next time. Leaving the red zone, not all the way to green, more like yellow, but no longer even orange. Whew. I'm sure you have your own sense of this process. It's natural to move back and forth between green and red, which our ancestors evolved to survive and pass on their genes. Green is the resting state, the home base of the brain and body, characterized by activation of the parasympathetic nervous system, repair and refueling of bodily systems, and a peaceful, happy, and loving mind. In green, we are usually benevolent toward ourselves, others, and the world. Then we rev up to red in order to avoid threats, pursue opportunities, or deal with relationship issues. The sympathetic fight or flight nervous system activates. Stress hormones like cortisol course through the bloodstream, and broadly defined, hatred, greed, and heartache course through the mind. In red, we're primed for fear, possessiveness, and aggression. If you're upset, if you're anxious, frustrated, irritated, or feeling put down or inadequate, you're in red or heading there quickly. You may have read my characterizations of green as the responsive mode of the brain and red as the reactive mode. Both modes are natural and necessary. But there are no innate costs to green, only benefits. While the benefits of red, for example, speed or intensity, are offset by serious costs to well-being, health, and longevity. Mother Nature didn't care about the costs of red when most of our primate, hominid, and human ancestors died young. These days, though, it behooves us to center in green as much as we can, using green approaches for threats and opportunities, and leave red as soon as possible. This is the foundation of psychological healing, long-term health, everyday well-being, personal growth, spiritual practice, and a peaceful and widely prosperous world. How? In a busy life, Each day gives you dozens of opportunities to leave the red zone and move toward green. Each time you do this, you gradually strengthen the neural substrates of green, one synapse at a time. In order to cope with urgent needs, the body can switch from green to red in a heartbeat. Then, it takes a while to return to green once stress hormones need time to metabolize out of your system. Even in yellow and orange, the effects and thus the costs of stress activation are present. So as soon as you notice the needle of your stressometer moving into yellow and beyond, take action. In your mind, intend to settle back down. Exhale slowly, twice as long as the inhalation. This helps you to light up the parasympathetic nervous system. Think of something, anything, that makes you feel safer, more fed and fulfilled, or more appreciated and cared about. Focus on these good feelings. Stay with them. Sense them sinking in. Relax the tension in your body as best you can. As you calm a bit, find your priority in whatever situation is stressing you and zero in on the key specific doable action or actions that are needed. Take refuge in knowing that you can only do what you can, that you can only encourage the causes of good things, but can't control the results themselves. In the world, try to slow down and step back. Speak carefully. Buy yourself some time. Drink some water, get some food, go to the bathroom. Before acting, raise your level of functioning. The center from which effective action flows, moving from red toward green. Try not to act from fear, anger, frustration, shame, or a bruised ego. Don't add logs to the fire. These approaches are not a panacea. They don't always work. It's like training a wild Mustang to become a saddle horse. Over and over again, you bring gentleness and firmness. You rein in fear and fire and encourage peaceful ease. You woo nature and help yourself come home to green. You are listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. Who are you prosecuting? The practice? Drop the case. Why? Lately, I've been thinking about a kind of case that's been running in my mind, about someone in my extended family. The case is a combination of feeling hurt and mistreated, critique of the other person, irritation with others who haven't supported me, views about what should happen that hasn't, and implicit taking things personally. In other words, the usual mess. It's not that I've been mistreated, actually, I have been. Nor that my analysis of things is inaccurate. Others agree that what I see does in fact exist. The problem is that my case is saturated with negative emotions like anger, bias toward my own viewpoint, and full of me, me, me. Every time I think of it, I start getting worked up, adding to the bad effects of chronic stress. It creates awkwardness with others, since even though they support me, they're naturally leery of getting sucked into my strong feelings or into my conflict with the other person. It makes me look bad, too cranked up about things in the past. And it primes me for overreactions when I see the person in question. Yes, I practice with this stuff arising in my mind and generally don't act it out, but still, it's a burden. I think my own experience of case making and its costs are true in general. In couples in trouble, one or both people usually have a detailed bill of particulars against the other person. At larger scales, different social or political groups have scathing indictments of the other side. How about you? Think of someone you feel wronged by. Can you find a case against that person in your mind? What's it feel like to go into that case? What does it cost you and others? The key, often not easy, is to be open to your feelings, for example, hurt or anger, to see the truth of things and to take appropriate action while not getting caught up in your case about it all. How? Bring to awareness a case about someone, probably related to a grievance, resentment, or conflict. It could be from your present or your past, resolved or still grinding. Explore this case, including the version of events in it, other beliefs and opinions, emotions, body sensations, and wants. Notice how you see the other person and yourself. For a moment or two, in your mind or out loud, get into the case and really make it. Then, notice what it's like to get revved up into your case. Mentally or on paper, list some of the costs to you and others of making this particular case. Next, list the payoffs to you. In other words, what do you get out of making this case? For example, making a case typically makes us feel in the right, is energizing, and helps cover over softer, vulnerable emotions like hurt or disappointment. Then ask yourself, are the payoffs worth the costs? With this understanding, see if you can stay with the difficult feelings involved in the situation, the basis for the case, without slipping into a reproachful or righteous case about them. To do this, it could help to start by resourcing yourself by bringing to mind the felt sense of being cared about by others and by opening to self-compassion. And try to hold these difficult feelings in a big space of awareness. Open to a wider, more impersonal, big picture view of the situation. So it's less about you and more about lots of swirling causes coming together in unfortunate ways. See if any kind of deeper insight about the other person, yourself, or the situation altogether comes to you. Listen to your heart. Are there any skillful actions to take, including naming the truth of things, disengaging from tunnels with no cheese, or the action of there is nothing that can be done? Watch how a case starts forming in your mind, trying to get its hooks into you. Then see if you can interrupt the process. Literally, set down the case, like plopping down a heavy suitcase when you finally get home after a long trip. What a relief. Enjoy the good feelings, the spaciousness of mind, the openness of heart, the inner freedom and other rewards of dropping your case. You have been listening to Just One Thing, Simple Practices for Resilience and Happiness by Dr. Rick Hansen. We are so busy these days that it's great to have just one thing to focus on, a simple theme to reflect on and be inspired by. This is your volunteer programmer, Barbara Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona Studios, thanking you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.